Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thank you, Pete. Always appreciate you getting us up to speed every half hour. We're Grant and Danny. Welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. Much appreciate you making the show part of your day. Right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. As you guys probably know, we are on the air in Richmond as well now. They have picked up the show over the last few months. So our audience in Richmond, Virginia, will find this segment particularly compelling, as well as all of you who care about the Redskins up here in Northern Virginia. But, Michael, they are not going to be in Richmond. This is not because of the city or the Redskins being at odds, but the NFL says they can't be. So let's start with just what does that mean, do you think, for Richmond that the Redskins won't be there? Will they feel that at all?
Yeah, well, you know, the announcement was made kind of before this whole pandemic started that they were going to waive the amount they were charging the city to come down here. So I think that was well received, obviously. That was one of those things where you say, okay, now, you know, maybe this everybody will welcome them with open arms now that the payment is not part of the process, or, you know, there's not that contentiousness. And then, of course, this happens. This was the last year of the deal. So I think it's fair to ask now, you know, is this the end for both sides? Is this the end of the deal?
So for Richmond, Michael, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I guess just describe the perspective. It's hard to put into words for an entire city and a group of people and fan base and everything else. But overall, just give me the Richmond perspective on this deal with the Redskins.
Well, I am happy to speak for the entire city, Danny, so don't worry about that.
As a spokesman, of course, yes.
You know, there were two sides to this. There were the Redskins fans who loved having the team down, loved having that easy access, loved having, you know, being able to, you know, essentially roll out of bed and watch a football team from, you know, about 10 yards away. The access at training camp is really as good as it gets in the NFL. A lot of fans from further south, from down North Carolina, you know, it was an easy way for them to get to the team, see the team. I think it was very well received by a lot of folks. Then on the other side, there was the people who said, hey, why are we spending $500,000 in taxpayer money to bring a $1 billion football operation down here? Use that money to fill in the blank, you know, pave the roads, build better schools, whatever they want them to do with it. And you know, I think both sides had compelling points there as far as that goes. I think it will go down as being enjoyed by the people who are fans of the team and not enjoyed by people who are not fans of the team.
Where are we at in the contract? I saw someone saying yesterday they may not go back at all. Is that even possible at this point?
Well, this was supposed to be the last year of the contract. It was an 8-year deal, and you know, there were the options, obviously, to renew. Ron Rivera was put in charge of that process. So when Ron Rivera took over the team, he was told, do whatever you want to do for training camp. And he has actually not been to Richmond and has not seen the facility yet. He was scheduled to visit the day after the Rudy Gobert game that kind of kicked off all the cancellations. So he didn't make the trip. It's not out of the realm of possibility that there will be an extension between the two sides. But, you know, there's no movement on that yet. I think there could absolutely be a 2021 appearance, assuming fans are allowed back in. It's kind of either a farewell year or, you know, just a chance to bring the team back down one more time. I think it was a moneymaker for the people involved, you know, people buying jerseys, buying, you know, sodas and slushies and all those things. I think there's demand for it. I don't know if it will happen, though, because, you know, that's a Ron Rivera call. One other thing I'd say is, you know, there are no lights on the field in Richmond. We've heard that Ron Rivera likes to practice at night. I don't think that's a deal breaker. I think we have lights available, most retail stores here. But just another thing to look out for that, you know, if they install lighting, that could mean a more permanent thing as opposed to just a one-year deal.
Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch with us here on G&D. And I always thought of this, and you could tell me if I was off base, but I thought the initial negotiations, Redskins-Richmond, was going to be some kind of quid pro quo, right? Where it's like, you guys invest a little bit now, talking to the Virginia government and then Richmond. Watch how much money we make for you. Then in turn, scratch our back again with some sort of stadium or upgraded facilities in Ashburn or kind of this, you know, new millennium of relationship. It just kind of hasn't happened that way, right? Is that how you saw the initial relationship to sort of why Richmond and why kind of pick this park just to sort of do something for the Commonwealth so that they would in turn help out the Redskins in some way? Was I off base? Am I thinking there?
No, I think it's a fair characterization that they wanted it to be the start of kind of a long relationship where the Redskins truly became Virginia's team. And, you know, we've beaten this topic to death, but Maryland is becoming more of a Raven state. And I think that has more to do with the success on the field than anything else. But, you know, Virginia is the one place, obviously inside the district as well, but Virginia is the one place where you'd say it is definitively and indisputably a Redskins territory. People here are fans. People here enjoy watching the team on a weekly basis. And so I think it's very important that they cater to that fan base. They come here when they do, and, you know, they make good with the legislators. And we've heard that since Bruce Allen has been dismissed, Dan Snyder's come down. He's visited with legislators here. He's met with the governor. He's done the same in Maryland. But he's absolutely very cognizant that this stadium deal looms over everything that's going on at the moment.
Michael, the facility at Richmond compared to the one they'll use now in Ashburn, I've been at both, obviously. I don't have as much knowledge of the behind-the-scenes stuff that they're using. A lot of it's done as far as meetings and things in hotels in Richmond. How would you compare it? Because they were going to use one way to get ready for the season. They're being told they have to use another. Are they better or worse off staying at home?
Well, I would first note that both facilities are below NFL standards. And maybe not NFL standards. That might be harsh, right? But, you know, if you were to rank the 32 teams, the Redskins facilities are in the bottom tier of what's going on.
You'd put Richmond there as well? Because I would have just thought, because of how new it is, and it's, you mentioned this is 8 years of existence, that it'd be way better off than the antiquated Redskins Park.
You know, I'm not going to say it was built on the cheap, but it's just a field. You look at what other teams are practicing, and they've got modern indoor facilities, and not bubbles, but true actual indoor buildings. There's no place for the team to meet at the field. You know, the rehab facilities are fairly minimal. They have to shuttle back and forth between the hotel. You know, it's not the primo setup most NFL teams are working with. But I think that we have to note that's true of Ashburn as well. They've put a lot of money into Ashburn in recent years. You've seen that. They upgraded the food a few years ago. You know, they built the new recovery center, the indoor treadmill. Everybody kept getting hurt, but now they have an underwater treadmill to run on after they do get hurt. So they're cognizant of that fact. I don't think Richmond's palatial by any stretch, though. It gets the job done. You know, drainage was an issue. There was one summer where it rained a lot, and it was tough to get out on the fields every day. I don't think there's anything in Richmond where you'd say they can't conduct a successful training camp there. But a lot of teams have really poured millions and millions of dollars into their facilities and made them, you know, much nicer in terms of amenities. That's something you hear from guys around the league who are free agents who come to play in D.C. They say it's not as nice here as it is other places.
Will not having training camp in Richmond hurt the relationship for sort of that part of the country and the Redskins long term, especially as you touched on? They haven't been any good, and if they're not good for longer, it might, you know, fans sort of leave en masse.
I think, you know, Richmond's an area where you can say the fans have hung on longer than in other areas. The TV ratings are down here, but they're not down as far as they are in the D.C. market or certainly in the North Carolina market. So I would say it's one of the last true strongholds the team has. I think everybody understands what's going on right now. You know, I don't think he's going to hold it against them. They can't come down here this summer. But long term, it's all about the results. And I think you guys were down there that first year. It was 2013, the Robert Griffin year. That first year in Richmond, people were packing that place. There were thousands of fans there every day chanting his name. It was crazy. And then, you know, you fast forward to last year and the Case Keenum training camp, and it just didn't have the buzz. It didn't have the juice. So I think the winnings is much a part of it as anything. I think people respond to winners, and you know, they just haven't fielded one in a long time.
Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch. Going back real quick before we wrap up here to something you and Danny were getting at earlier. You were talking about the stadium. I've always kind of felt they're going to end up training wherever their new stadium is. You look at some of these places now that get built, and the facility is at the stadium, and the players all live close by wherever that is. Do you think that that's how this has to go? In other words, does Richmond may or may not be able to host training camp anyway after there's a new stadium if that's the way they want to do this?
You're on the money, yeah. I've been told the training camp is part of the new deal, and it's not just that. So, one, the facilities will be a lot nicer. So we're talking about 2027 being the first year they could move in. But the team is also interested in, you know, really building out the area around it. You look at the Star in Frisco, what Arizona's done out by their stadium. Boston has the same thing by the Patriots Stadium. It's a big mall. It's a team museum. It's restaurants. It's, you know, they want people coming year-round. It's almost certainly going to be a sports book now as well. You can add that into the list. You know, they need foot traffic year-round, and training camp is a way to provide that foot traffic. There will be competitive advantages. It'll be a very nice facility, but there will also be financial advantages that they will want as many people as possible flowing through that facility on a daily basis to go look at the Lombardis, to go to the team museum, to take a tour of the locker room, you know, whatever it is they're offering that day.
At Michael P. RTD for Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch. Thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it.
You bet.
There's Michael. Listen to him right here on the Fan regularly with us and read his work in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, as Danny just mentioned. Next, what should Sean Payton do to bring his team together now? What's next for Drew Brees and the teammates that he hurt with his remarks yesterday? You're listening to the Fan. Chris Miles is on the show coming up in 15 minutes. Talk about the return of the NBA and the fact that the Wiz are sneaking in to a 9-team Eastern Conference field, a 22-team extension return to play for hoops. Make sure you're listening at 1:30 for that. The biggest story today in sports and the biggest story in the country, it's not particularly fun to talk about, but it is what is going on right now, is Drew Brees' comments yesterday. We will let you hear them and the reaction of some of his teammates and players from around the league here on Grant and Danny.
I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place.
If you don't understand that other people experience something totally different than you, then when you talk about being the brotherhood and all this other bull, it's just lip service or it's only on the field. Because when we step off this field and I take my helmet off and I'm a black man walking around America and I'm telling you I'm dealing with these things, I'm telling you my communities are dealing with these things, and your response to me is, don't talk about that here. This is not the place. Drew, where is the place, Drew? I'm disappointed. I'm hurt. Because while the world tells you that you're not worthy, that your life doesn't matter, the last place you want to hear from are the guys that you go to war with and that you consider to be allies and to be your friends. Even though we're teammates, I can't let this slide.
I really ain't got no more words for you, bro. You a sucker, man. Straight BS, man. Straight BS. And for all my Saints fans, for all my New Orleans people who still like your ass just because they want to win games, y'all right with them. You understand? Drew Brees, you're a sucker. You're going to be a sucker. You understand? Punk, man.
So that was Malcolm Jenkins, who's teammates with Drew Brees, sandwiched in the middle after Brees, and Ed Reed, the Hall of Fame safety thereafter. I'm not sure how the vitriol or the anger, and I understand where it comes from Ed Reed, but the idea that everyone should now just hate Drew Brees, and if you don't, then you're the problem too. I don't know how that helps anything, and I don't know how that advances us societally, brings us closer together, helps change anything that's going on right now. That having been said, you understand the frustration, the pain, and what Ed Reed when he heard that is going through. But, you know, forget Reed for a moment or any of the players that are retired or that are outside that locker room. You know, specific to the Saints, just in that dressing room, I mean, you had major backlash for this quarterback from wide receivers that catch 100-plus passes from him, like Michael Thomas, and running backs who have vied for postseason wins with him, like Alvin Kamara. These guys are unfollowing him on social media. And again, Drew Brees, you wake up yesterday morning, Danny, you put together a list of the most beloved figures in sports, like the most righteous, I'm thinking of the right words here, but who's your Mr. Rogers, right?
Yeah,
who is
your guy? The infallible, right? Yeah.
That has just done everything right, that you can't find people to say a negative word about, that is probably, he doesn't have those demons in the closet of people that he's mistreated, and maybe we're wrong about that, but Brees has been that guy. That's kind of the image, and the comments are, as you just heard them, what led to the backlash yesterday. But he went from, at the beginning of the day, being kind of Mr. New Orleans and helping to rebuild that city to, you know, at the protests, they're chanting bleep Drew Brees and they're burning his jerseys. And yeah. It was, what a 24 hours. Obviously, everyone from Aaron Rodgers saying it has never been about an anthem or a flag. Not then, not now. Listen with an open heart. Let's educate ourselves. To LeBron James, wow, man, you literally still don't understand why Cap was kneeling on one knee. To Malcolm Jenkins, his teammate, it's unfortunate because I considered you a friend. I look up to you. You're somebody who I had a great deal of respect for. Made the rounds yesterday, and everyone had an opinion. Brees started his day today by issuing a big apology on Instagram for offending and bothering so many of his teammates. But I just wonder where the Saints go from here and where and what Sean Payton's doing today.
Yeah, there's nothing easy about this. And I want to pull back here for a second, okay? So let's say that Drew Brees never gives this interview with Yahoo Finance, okay? So Wednesday doesn't occur. His PR person says no. This question never gets asked. He never answers it. The balance sheet on Drew Brees, there was a miss, I think, in there at one point where he supported a cause that turns out wasn't very sensitive at all to LGBT folks. And, you know, some people have accused him of endorsing a glorified pyramid scheme. Okay, put those on the balance sheet. But the positive on the balance sheet is he's done more for, you know, sick children, for the city of New Orleans, for disadvantaged communities, for people affected by COVID-19. The list goes on and on and on of his charitable accomplishments and how much he's meant to that city, okay? So you've got I would say, even if you dislike some of the things that he did in the past, a very positive balance sheet for Drew Brees. Then this statement gets made. And the timing, I think, and Clinton Portis touched on this when he was on earlier with us. He was fantastic, by the way, if you missed it, radio.com/rewind. So the timing is what's most at stake here. At no point did he say, you know, Kaepernick should never have played again. Anybody that kneels, I hate them. He didn't say a lot of the things that I think would warrant this level of response. And I understand that the timing is just rotten at this point. This is not what people needed to hear at this stage, because there's been this, you know, not re-legislating, but sort of a reminder. This is what Kaepernick was talking about 4 years ago, and here we are still in this place. And I think that's a very valid conversation to have at this point. It's a tough one to have. The reaction to what Drew Brees said, it basically, don't we want folks to share? Don't we want conversation? Don't we want different perspectives? To me, he said, this is what this means to me. And I think a lot of people could say, hey, you're wrong. I'm not endorsing or criticizing comments, by the way. What I'm saying is he spoke from his heart about what something means to him. Okay, and he missed the mark, it sounds like, and that's all well and good. The level of reaction is something you would give to a horrible person, right? Isn't it? And that's kind of the my only observation in this. Again, I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong, and I'm not trying to qualify or defend anything or re-legislate an argument that we've had for you know, however many years or whatever. I'm just saying, this to me was not the. It didn't rise to the level that the response, or it didn't warrant necessarily the response that he's gotten, where people are calling him names, burning his jersey, and the like. And then he apologizes today, and it may not be enough for some, and I get that. But I don't know. I guess I'm kind of going around in circles. But to me, GP, this is a tough situation, and I just lament the fact that we're supposed to be listening to each other. I would rather people be honest than hide behind stuff. So I don't know. I guess I don't know where we go from here.
One of our listeners who tweets us all the time, and it comes to a lot of our events, Gylo, I hate that I even have to say this, by the way. I mean, this is even a dumb thing to say. He's a African-American listener. Who cares what race he is? Or, you know, he's a listener of ours. He's a friend of ours, whatever. But he tweeted and he said, the issue isn't Drew Brees respecting the flag. The fact he said kneeling is disrespecting the flag, completely ignoring what this is all about. It's not evil. It's ignorant. I understand that side of it, too. Just like Drew Brees' opinion is that when the national anthem is being played and the flag is on the field, he thinks that he won't be able to agree with the people around him that are taking a knee because it's about the flag. And what Guilo's saying, and I think it's a correct point, and I think it's a great kind of clarification, is he's saying Brees' point is you're disrespecting the flag. What Guilo's saying is that has really nothing to do with what Kaepernick was doing at all. That's kind right. of the distraction that it becomes, and Brees is perpetuating something that makes it harder to make progress. In other words, if the NFL is still going to be arguing about why a knee is being taken, that it's going to be hard for the league to take the steps forward. I think what pains so many players is that Brees is the good guy. You know what I mean? I think people were so bothered because if Drew Brees is saying this, then what about the actual bad guys? I understand everyone's thoughts here. I guess my big picture takeaway last night was, my goodness. Yep. I mean, how bad off are we right now in terms of trying to come together if Drew Brees is enemy of the state number one? Because there are hateful, awful people. I mean, there are people that
don't
got
plenty of those.
any good. And this guy now, he's become the problem for that comment. It's just scary how divided we are, and fingers crossed we can get through this with progress being made so we don't have to have days like this years and years from now. Because, you know, as I said, it was several years ago now. Adam Eaton was a young member of the Chicago White Sox when they were playing a game against the Orioles at Camden Yards because they were protests that turned into rallies and turned into looting and all kinds of things in Baltimore after a very similar situation. Nothing's that different now, right? I mean, we can't just keep doing this every 10 or 15 years and having an uncomfortable week and then moving on and getting back to normal. You hope that maybe this time is different.
I keep coming back to the same thing, that the timing is just the worst part of all this. But if somebody asked me, hey, why do you stand up for the anthem? Right. I would give an answer. And in nowhere in there is that a reflection of somebody that chooses something different. You know what I mean? Like, I don't begrudge somebody that's trying to call attention to something. And some people do. And again, that's your prerogative. But I stand because you don't have to. Right. I stand because of who came before me, whether everybody from my grandfather to my dad to the million other people that served. And I think that's my reason for standing, is I honor them, and I have a solemn moment to think about people that aren't just me, that I think about the whole world and what the country means to me. That's why I stand up. If you have a different agenda and something else to do, Godspeed. It's in there. They wrote the document down a few hundred years ago as to figure out what the hell you're supposed to do and how to do it. And you know, you could share your voice in whatever manner you deem fit. So I don't know. It's basically, to me, he answered the question, how do you feel? And he answered that. And it turned into a firestorm.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Chris Miles of NBA TV on the return of basketball next. Who's ready for some sports, huh? Who's ready for some basketball? It's coming your way, it sounds like. We'll find out any minute now that the owners are agreeing to the 22-team return to play format. Chris Miles of NBA TV and NBC Sports Washington, locally ultra-talented, and a good dude I've gotten to know in the Bethesda studios over the years, joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Chris, I guess let's start with the Wizards. They might be dancing into the playoffs as a 16 seed trying to cut down the Nets. They made the cut.
Hey, maybe they can be like UMBC, man, to have an upset. Bradley Beal going off for 50 in a series or something. So I'm excited, man. I'm hoping to see them win some of those games and get in and, you know, make the playoffs this year and have some positive momentum.
So what do you want to see in these eight games? How do you want to deploy the rotation? You want to play Bradley Beal, you know, 46 and a half minutes? Or how should they treat these eight games? Just another chance to get the kids on the court or go all out? Just kind of give me your thoughts.
Well, you got to think about this. I saw the math on it, and we had 141 days of the NBA season before it was suspended. When they get back on the court on July 31st, it'll be 141 days since play was suspended.
Wow.
I think if you're the Wizards, man, you got to go all in and give your best effort in the sense of you want guys to still progress in their careers. I mean, that's a full off season in a sense. So, you know, to me, it's like, yeah, you could sit Bradley Beal, but then what? You sit him from March to December of a year? That's too much time off from not playing competitive basketball. So I think you go full throttle. You try to get some camaraderie. I mean, I know that John Wall isn't going to play. I've been told that over and over again. But, man, I think for John, I'd love to see him on the court as well. But that's just me as a fan of his game and a fan of this team. But that's not going to happen.
All right, so let's look broader now at the association. Do we know who benefits and who doesn't from this pause? When we hit resume, which teams are going to be better off from the break and maybe based on when certain areas opened up, the extra training they got to do?
Well, I tell you what. I think I look at teams, there's two different factors. I think teams with international players that were not in this country during the time, I would be a little concerned with them. For instance, Luka Doncic, we know he's been in Europe. So he's got to come back, he's got to quarantine, and he's got to try to work and, you know, then go to Orlando. So there's a lot with players like that. The Toronto Raptors are at a huge disadvantage because of the fact that, you know, they have players who have been in America, or I guess in the United States of America, and haven't been in Canada to use the team facility. So there are a lot of those international stories that get into weeds a lot. I think for instance, the Milwaukee Bucks, we don't know how serious that Giannis knee injury was, but we know that's enough time for him to come back healthy. I mean, that's a big factor. You got to think for an older player like LeBron James, having this time off to get his body fresh, you got to think that's a benefit for the Lakers as well. So I think some of the veteran teams have a bit of an advantage. What are the Brooklyn Nets going to do? I mean, Kyrie Irving should be able to play, and what if Kevin Durant can come back? If they're a seventh seed in the East, oh, man, I mean, you got to love their chances against anybody. So I think those are kind of the storylines that we're going to have to pay very close attention to.
And Chris Miles is with us here on Grant and Danny. So who are you most looking forward to seeing? Just thinking about it, right? I want to see Rui in some meaningful games. I think that's a great experience. I want to see Davis Bertans. I want to see Thomas Bryant in games that matter. You haven't really played many meaningful games over the course of this year. Beal has over the course of his career, but none of these guys, these young guys, have really done that. Who are you most looking forward to seeing how they handle some of this pressure, although not, you know, this isn't the conference finals here, but it's still meaningful games for a chance to get to the postseason. Who do you want to see under the lights?
Man, I think Jerome Robinson would be number one on my list, simply because you got to remember, Wizards traded for him. He was a 13th pick in the draft, one after Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And he looked good in minutes when he was getting opportunities for the Wizards, a very young player. I think he's 22 or 23 now. Same draft as Troy Brown. So Troy Brown, Jerome Robinson, man, I just want to see what these guys truly have. I started to see it later in the season, but these guys haven't gotten enough NBA minutes. And when John comes back, I want to see if they can play with him. So those two, I mean, they've been on my radar all season. I want to see what kind of condition they come back in, how aggressive they are, and that sort of thing. They would be one and two on my list. I think I know who Rui Hachimura is. And the same thing with Davis Bertans, man. If you can be seventh in the league in three-pointers made without John Wall on the court with you, I think Davis Bertans can lead the league in three-pointers made. So he's a keeper. I mean, whatever you got to do to lock him up with John back, I think you do that and just deal with his inability on defense. You take that with his ability to make three-pointers. So I think Troy Brown and Jerome Robinson, one and two on my list.
Chris, what do you worry about with the return? We've forgotten, and nobody really talks about COVID-19 anymore, but I mean, it takes one guy having a positive test, and who knows what happens. Are they going to be able to pull this off?
You know, that's the biggest question. I think that's why we've had to wait so long for the NBA to have this plan. So last night on our show on NBA TV, I talked to Sham Sharania about, you know, what took so long for the NBA to come out and have their plan, and that's their number one concern. They feel as if by having everyone quarantined in Orlando, by teams making the commitment to be there, that they feel strongly that they can keep it contained in the sense of, you know, no one testing positive. I know that's asking a lot, but they feel like they have the test, they have the infrastructure to try and get it done, and I think it would be incredible if it does happen. As far as if someone tests positive, I do not have the answer to that question, but I imagine, I mean, a guy will have to sit out, and then, that would be a different can of worms, but that's no different than any other injury that a player may have as far as
but,
not
but
being
do you think it would just
team.
Be that guy, or do you have to now no one can play until we test everyone or quarantine certain people?
You know, that's a great question, and I would be lying to you if I told you I had the answer right now. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed, and I'm sure that when they put out all of the information this week, I mean, it's supposed to come out later today. Originally, it was supposed to come out Monday, but obviously our country was going through a lot on Monday and Tuesday. So I think the next couple of days we'll have those answers, but right now we really don't know what the policy is. But be sure, when they make the announcement of what's happening with play being resumed, that that's going to be part of the equation.
Chris, I'm just excited. I hope there are no snafus. I hope that everybody's there or votes digitally, however the hell they're doing it. I missed it. I didn't realize how much I was going to miss it. I want hoops back. Bring me this. Give it to me. Give me tournament style. Let's cut down nets. Let's kick it like the old school ACC basketball, man. I can't wait for this stuff. I hope it all gets done, and we'll be talking to you throughout, buddy. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. See you soon.
Watch Chris Miles on NBA TV. Chad Dukes versus the World is 17 minutes away. We've got to wrap this show up and hit the leftovers next on G&D. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Tomorrow, NFL coaching staffs are allowed to get back into their team facilities. Head coaches, namely, and I'm guessing coordinators as well. They're going to limit the number of coaches on site. My take on this is I don't think Ron Rivera can do anything tomorrow at Redskins Park that he couldn't do before. Yeah, set up his office a little bit more like he wants to. He might have better access technologically to some of the film stuff, easier to click through at the team facility than at home. But they all have this stuff downloaded to their iPads now. They watch every practice. They can watch every game. They can do a lot of that stuff at home. Maybe you're less distracted because you got a dog and a family and you got to take the dog for a walk or something. But in 2020, can Ron Rivera be that much more productive at Redskins Park without the ability to interact with players than at his own house? I can't imagine that's that big of a deal.
This is going to sound really stupid. Okay, so bear with me on it, okay? For baseball practice, it's monotonous. It's miserable. Nobody enjoys doing it. You got to work on, like, bunt coverage and pickoffs and relays and you run sprints. It stinks except for batting practice. Like, batting practice is awesome. Everything around it stinks, right, about baseball practice. There was a day where we would see our uniforms, the new ones that came in for the following season, and coach let us practice in those uniforms. Always the best practice. It's still baseball. You could still put on your normal T-shirt and, you know, your baseball pants and the normal stuff that you always wear. You're still practicing a thing. But there was something really exciting about that. That's what this reminds me of. Of course, you're 100% right. You could do all the things that you could do before, but there's something special about that first time, right? It's like the coach letting you practice in the stadium for, you know, before, or doing like a Friday Night Lights thing before a game. Just something to that effect. That I'm with you. The work can get done, but there's something exciting about being able to turn the lights on again, maybe.
No doubt in my mind. And I wouldn't advocate against the fact that being back at your job makes you feel normal and makes you feel like it's happening. It's real. I mean, same thing with you and I. We're probably going to be doing these shows from home for several more weeks. And it's not really going to be until we're back in our studio that I'll feel like this is behind us, that this is all over, as long as we're broadcasting from our basement. So I get that part of it. You know, I just mean, if we're in studio versus we're at our house, is anything different? In our capacity, you're going to have some fewer snafus technologically, probably. You know, you're going to be able to better communicate and kind of use nonverbal communication with Tom and Brendan. Some things get a lot easier. For Ron Rivera, I'm sure some of that, the specifics of the actual devices he's using, better at Redskins Park. But until the players are there and you're having those meetings and you're going through the rigors of the preseason process, it's good that this is happening. You got to have the ability to walk before you run so that they're going to get these guys back in the offices. That's great. But I guess my point is, I don't know if it means that like he's better prepared for the season in a week because now he's in his office than he would have been just hanging out in his home office. It is time right now on Grant and Danny for this date in Nats history. Today the date is June 4th. Here in 2020, we are going back in time just 3 years to an 11-10 win over the Oakland A's. A crazy finish. This game was tied at 3 heading to the 8th inning. The Nats scored 8 runs in the last couple of innings. 7 runs scored by Oakland in that time made it one of the more wild Nats games in a couple of years. Ryan Zimmerman, the reason why the Nats got the win.
3-1 pitch, swing and a long drive, deep left field, going, and it is gone, goodbye! Just inside the foul pole, a 3-run homer for Ryan Zimmerman. Bang, zoom goes the Z-Man. It's his 16th home run of the season. 3 more runs batted in for Ryan Zimmerman, now with 48 on the season. And the Nationals have broken the tie with a 3-run homer. It's now Washington 6 and Oakland 3.
I was so happy for Ryan Zimmerman that he got to have that season. That fully healthy year where he hit over 300, hit 36 bombs, drove in over 100 runs, and was a stud in the middle of that lineup. Carried them for weeks at a time, quite frankly. He was great after a couple injury-plagued years, and he was sort of robbed of you know, a guy that was on his way to having an outstanding career. We sort of forgot how good that guy can be when he was healthy. That was a great year, and that was right in the heart in the middle of it, man, where he was just wrecking baseballs for that club. That was fun.
A couple of days ago, after the show, we're sitting in the basement. I'm hanging out with the baby. She's, like, grabbing Legos and just dragging them around. She can't build anything, but she just, like, puts them in various piles for no reason. And my wife goes, "What's that noise?" And I'm like, "I don't know. What do you hear?" She starts running up the steps, just running upstairs. So I hear her screaming from upstairs. I'm going, "What is going on?" So I walk up the steps as she's running out the door, and I look out, and she's chasing an ice cream truck in front of our house. She had grabbed, like, $4 cash. She chased it down. She got an ice cream cone for her and an ice cream cone for the baby from the ice cream truck. Came by the house, like door to door in my neighborhood. What are the chances of that? Like, why would that ever happen? In my little cul-de-sac here I live in what is essentially townhomes, side to side, you know, a bunch of people kind of looking right at each other's properties, and the neighbors are very close to you. And this ice cream truck, not like out on the street or anything, just driving through this little neighborhood. And she chased it down, and it stopped, and she got ice cream. I didn't even think that happened in real life.
Oh, it does. Welcome to the burbs, dude. That's the thing. The ice cream guys aren't dumb. I mean, that guy parks right in front of my son's school every day, starting at about 2:20. And he knows. He knows. Both
How
parents,
often does your son get ice cream?
Once a week, we've tried to limit it to. But sometimes it's more than that because everyone else is getting it. And he just sits there for 3 hours, and he makes all the money.
Smart business. Yep. But $3 for a regular cone or something like that, not bad at all. Now, your boy, he did not partake. I'm doing my best. I'm having a good, clean week. It's been a productive week. But the baby loves some ice cream. So who knows? Maybe today we'll hear that noise again and everyone will go running outside. For Danny, Dar, Dom, I'm Grant. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate it. Chat's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.